Bruchim Haboy, and welcome to another week of Parsha Insights, Parsha Kiseitse. I am so deeply grateful, so makir toiv, to those who are here in the Heicho, watching and listening to the Shir live, those who are listening to the Shir now, and those who will bezes Hashem hear the recording. Parsha Kiseitse, this year, as we continue, the Shiurim are being sponsored, Lezecher Nishmas Uli Ili Nishmas, Rebecca Basarina and Leon Ben Rachel. The Ezras Hashem, may the Neshama Tahiris have a lichtige Gan Eden. I'm so grateful to all those who participate each and every week in the Parsha Insights. It was a wonderful thing during the few weeks during the summer while traveling here, there, wherever it might have been, having met people that would say, oh, I heard this year or that insight, and chazaring it. It was a great source of chizuk, truly a fulfillment of mi yedeya mi machazik es mi. It gave me and continues to give me incredible chizuk. So for Parsha Insights, Parshas Kiseitse, I'd like, especially as we find ourselves approaching the midway point of Chodesh Elul, what are we doing to properly prepare? Let's learn some extraordinary lessons in Parshas Kiseitse, and hopefully Be'ezus Hashem tie them into Chodesh Elul, preparing for Yom Hadin, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippur, Tav Shin Pei Gimel, and as always the point of the Shiurim, to be able to enhance our Shabbos Kodesh. It would be a wonderful thing if on Shabbos we're able to say over and repeat some of the Divrei Torah. If you take a look in the beginning of the Parsha, the opening Pasuk speaks, Kiseite la milchama aloivecha, going out to war against your enemy. Did you notice that at the end of Parsha Shoftim, there's also, if a person takes a look in Perek Chof, Pasuk Yotes, there as well we're speaking about going out to war. Kisotzer al ir yomim rabim lehilochim aleha, Perek Chof, Pasuk Yotes, towards the end of Shoftim, talking about when you besiege a city to wage war against it, to capture it. So it's interesting, the end of Shoftim, war. The beginning of Kiseitse, war. And in between the two, you got it. I could tell from your facial expression, you got it. Egla Arufa. In middle, we speak about Egla Arufa, which is, of course, the story about the lone traveler who is killed along the way. That well-known topic of Egla Arufa. Rebel Yisrei, Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh Levracha, says an extraordinary pshat. Why is it that in between these two passages of war, where we speak about the Melchemes Mitzvah, we speak about the war at the end of Shoftim, the war in the beginning of Kiseitse, and all of a sudden, in between the two topics of Melchama, we speak about something that seems to be totally unrelated, and that is the Parsha of Egla Rufa. Why are they juxtaposed with it? Why is it juxtaposed with the two? And Rebellia says such a powerful vart, such an extraordinary insight into the way the human mind and emotion works. You see, when you speak about the idea of war, the war that ends the Parsha then, the war that begins this week's Parsha, sometimes when you talk about war and all of the death and all of the killing, sometimes a person might chalila become callous. They might become insensitive to death. They tend to get lost in numbers. Thousands were killed. Cities were wiped out. Myriad. We tend to lose ourselves, perhaps becoming no longer acutely sensitive to human life. Maybe a bit insensitive, based on the numbers. Sometimes, unfortunately, Nebuchadnezzar becomes so staggering. The numbers, the thousands, the cities, the communities, wiped it, whatever it might be. Says Reb Elia so powerfully, Egla Arufa teaches us the value of a single person. It's talking about the lone traveler, the single death, that death of that person. to teach us the antithesis of what might happen to us during war, but rather the respect that's due to a single person, to a single body. It's to reinforce our sensitivity and reinforce our awareness that the war could have potentially erased. What a mapel dikup shot. In fact, perhaps this also gives an added dimension. I remember once hearing someone say they took umbrage that people say Hitler, yamach shemai v'zichroi, killed 6 million Yidden. He didn't kill 6 million Jews. He killed one Jew 6 million times. Now, of course, that really means kol Yisrael arevim zebazeh, the achdus, the unity, were one Yid times 6 million. But perhaps according to the pshat that we just said from rebellion, it has an added dimension. Sometimes a person could hear such a staggering number that's not fathomable. 6 million. 1.5 million children. And we can't fathom the number. We get lost in such a number. Perhaps the comment I made a moment ago is to remind us it's one Yid 6 million times. It's the lesson of the Egla Arufa, the lone traveler, the single death, the loss of one person. It's to remind us to be aware and acutely sensitive to one person, to one nefesh, to one neshama, to one Yid. And that's certainly something extraordinary to remind ourselves as we approach Yom HaDin, the power of that one person, the respect that's due that person. I saw an incredible vart brought down. I saw a beautiful vart brought down from Rebbe Vavi Yosef Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh Levracha. And I think it's found later, this vart that's found later on in the Parsha, I do believe it ties in magnificently with this concept that Reb Elia introduced us to. Don't allow war to desensitize you to numbers, to that of one Yiddish life. If a person takes a look in Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Aleph, just a bit later on in Parshas Kisaytse, right after Sheni, the Pasuk there is telling us, Leisire Eshar Achicha, a person should not see the ox of your brother, or the sheep, or his goat, and the Midochin, the animal, is going through a difficult time. You're watching the lost sheep, your brother's ox, the salamta mehem. You should not go ahead and hide yourself. Don't go ahead and conceal yourself, but rather the pasuk says, "Hoshev teshivem lo'achicha, return them to your brother." Listen, you might think, says Rabbi Avi Yosef, how could a person read this pasuk? If the Torah is telling us that if you see the ox of your brother or his lost animal, you're obligated to return it to him. Says Rabbi Avadia, what about your brother himself? What about if a Yid is lost? What about if somebody doesn't know the beauty of a Shabbos or of a Yom Tov? Or they wouldn't know that in a few short weeks is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim. If you're obligated to return a lost animal, kal v'chomer ben b'nai shel kal v'chomer, could we possibly ignore a fellow Yid? Somebody who's calling for help? Somebody who might be lost? How dare we remain indifferent? If the Torah tells us the importance, as we quoted a moment ago, Hoshe Teshive, and you have to return them, my rabbi, I shouldn't Hoshe Teshive certainly apply all the more so exponentially to your lost brother, sister, the person in Klal Yisrael? We're privileged to know from a beautiful way Derechel Darchei Noyam, and others don't? What right do we have not to fulfill these words of Hoshev Teshivim? And it doesn't have to be somebody who's lost, who doesn't know from the beauty of the Torah way or from Yiddishkeit. Sometimes people are calling for help. And perhaps they're not calling for help because it's too difficult for them, but we're aware, be it financially, physically, psychologically, emotionally, people feel lost. There's a lot going on, as we've said many times. People are torn. It's a topic we spoke about Matzah Shabbos. People are pulled in many, many different directions. People could feel lost. If you have to fulfill Hoshif Teshivim with their animal, Alachas Kama V'Kama Kal V'Chaymer Ben Benayshal Kal V'Chaymer, how much more so we have to fulfill it if a person is feeling lost. What are we doing to find and to help those that feel lost? What a powerful schus that would be as we approach Rosh Hashanah Tovshin Pei Gimel HaBa'aleinu L'Taiva. What a powerful concept it would be where we're able to show the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're looking for those who are lost. Every single one. Don't say, but it's one. It's just one. That's precisely why Rebellia says Egla Arufa is juxtaposed and is in between those two concepts of war, not to become desensitized, but being there for the person who's lost or might feel that they need to be returned. I saw brought down in the beautiful Sefer that we've quoted from many times, Rav Yaakov Bender on Chumash. It's a fabulous, fabulous, extraordinary Sefer. And in it, after bringing down this beautiful pshat from Reb Elia, he brings down a Maisa. I thought it was such a fabulous Maisa, Maisa with Reb Mendel Kaplan, the legendary Reb Mendel Kaplan of the Philadelphia Yeshiva. He brings down the Maisa that Reb Mendel Kaplan would make sure that the Bacher that served as a Vekar means the one that was charged with waking up the Bacher for Shacharis, maybe not the most popular and sought-after job, certainly not by those who are on the other side of the Vekar who need to be woken up. Reb Mendel Kaplan would direct the Bacher who served as the Vekar. He had to be the one that brought breakfast to those in the yeshiva when a Bacher wasn't feeling well. Why? Why did it have to be the same one? Reb Mendel, with his extraordinary wisdom and insight, felt that when you're charged with the job of being a Vekar, sometimes a Vekar might go ahead and involve a little bit of callous behavior. You might become a little bit desensitized because the Vekar sometimes, to get the person out of bed, we don't want to reveal all the secrets of what a Vekar does, but sometimes the Vekar has to shout and prod, maybe even throw a little bit of water, but whatever it is, it certainly might desensitize even slightly somebody's feelings towards somebody else. And the Mailer of Mendel wanted that very same person to be the one that brought breakfast to the Bachur who weren't feeling well. They should dafka engage in that extra act of chesed. They should dafka do something to counter what might go ahead and create a lack of awareness and a feeling of sensitivity, because as we said, sometimes it might involve, albeit inadvertently perhaps, a callous type behavior. That Bacher was charged specifically with something of an extra chesed, an extra sensitivity, care, concern, and compassion to make sure that the other chalila did not become a part of him. That's why Egla Arufa is juxtaposed with the two stories of Milchama. Don't become desensitized, indifferent, or callous to just one person, because to that one person, it's not a just. To that one person, it's an entire world that he's looking, oh, can somebody please save me? And if it has to be done for somebody's animal, then surely hashev tishivim for the person themselves. As I said a few moments ago, I'm humbly suggesting, as one of the ways of fulfilling the acronym that we spoke out, Elul, Aleph Lamed Vav Lamed, we mentioned last week, it stands for Ohuv Lemata V'Nechmad Lemata. To be beloved upstairs in the eyes of Hashem and to be cherished down in this world. What do we do to become Elul? What do we do to become Ahuv Lemala V'Nechmad Lemata? I believe the answer is Hoshev Teshivim. To look for our brothers and sisters, to look for somebody within, without, who might be lost, who might not know the beauty of Torah Derecha D'Acheinayam, or perhaps one that does, but is feeling lost for a whole potpourri of reasons. What are we doing to return them? And perhaps that's an extraordinary schus to bring into the Yemei Din Tavshin Pei Gimel, because it shows the care and concern for what shouldn't be perceived as just one person. If a person takes a look a bit later on in the parsha, Chof Beis Ches, we quoted from Chof Beis Aleph, turn now to Chof Beis Ches. Ki sivne bayis chodosh vosisa maka legagecha. You're building a new house. Make a fence for your roof. There is a pshat that a number of years ago I thought of, the Siyata Dishmaya, on this idea that the Torah is teaching us vasisa maka legagecha, to make a fence for the roof of your home. In preparing for the Parsha Insights, I saw a beautiful and powerful verse brought down from the Ben Ish Chai, Reb Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, Zecher Tzadik v'Kadosh Levracha. I'm using part of what he says with that I had thought of a number of years ago. Part of what he said, I feel that I can use, really, of course, the entire part, but I'd like to share with you what I thought of and tie it into part of what he said. He basically wonders, I need the Torah to tell me something that seems so basic? It seems like such an obvious safeguard, you wouldn't think the Torah has to make it an actual obligation. You're building a house. You have to make sure there's a gated fence or a guardrail. Nobody should fall off the roof and get injured. If it seems like such an obvious safeguard, what's the Torah teaching us here? It's a great kasha. So the Ben Ish Chai tells us there's a deeper meaning in what this pasuk is teaching us. Ki sivne bayis chadash. Bayis, he says, doesn't only refer to the bayis that you have, your home, your house, whatever your address is. Your body is called a bayis. If I may bring a proof to it, my father's atzal used to often say, take a look at the paragraph that precedes Baruch Shamar when you daven Ashkenaz, Mizmor Shir Chanukas HaBayis LeDavid. People say that that chapter refers to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Mizmor Shir Chanukas HaBayis LeDavid. Frek the Medrash, Lechi David Banahu? David didn't build the Beis HaMikdash. His son Shlomo HaMelech built it. So there are many answers to the Medrash. My father, Zatzal, was very fond of saying over one pshat, this paragraph is not referring to the Chanukah HaBayis of the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, if you read sentence after sentence, the paragraph that precedes Baruch Shamar, you won't find that it's referring to the Beis HaMikdash. you won't find sentences that talk about the building of the Beis HaMikdash. My father used to quote the Mefarish that tells us David HaMelech was a chayla at the time, and he was granted a refuah shalema. Mizmor shir chanukas habayis leDavid. His guf was his bayis. And when he was granted a refuah shalema, it's like the ability to start again. It's like a rededication. And that's what this kapitel means when it talks about chanukas habayis. Is talking about after being healed from the sickness and being able to start again. That's the Chanukah HaBayis L'David. Which bias? His guf. In fact, if you take a look at all the sentences that follow, now that I told you what it refers to, you'll see how beautifully and impeccably well it fits into this interpretation of bias. Be it as it may, the bias refers to your guf. To you, to yourself. It comes Elul. We wonder, can we make meaningful changes? Can we do things practically, pragmatically, and tangibly to improve? Says the Ben Ish Chai, this pasuk on a deeper meaning is referring to Elul. Ki sivneh bayis chadash. You want to rebuild your bias. You want to go ahead and you're serious about creating a bias chadash, a new you. A new you. That's the bias chadash. Your bias is your very essence. And Elul, as we try to make commitments for the new year, every person, sivne bias chadash, wants to build a new you, a new house, a new self. I want to go ahead and make a meaningful change. That's the way the Ben Ish Chai starts. So I'd like to continue with the words, Vasisa Naka Ligagecha. Years ago, I thought perhaps these words are teaching us, in light of the fact that it has to be more than just what's an obvious safeguard. What is the concept of a roof? Generally, you know, like the expression that we say in English, oh, I have a roof over my head. The idea of having a roof over our head sometimes represents a certain self-assuredness that might be a little bit false. It might be a little bit of a smug feeling. Yeah, I'm good to go. Yeah, I have everything made. I have a roof over my head. In fact, I believe it is Rav Shamshon of Falhurst that explains, before Mashiach comes, we have the battle of Gog and Magog. And he explains how Gog and Magog really originate from the word Gag. And it's the causative effect. Like Or, Me'or, Gog, Magog, it's the idea of a roof. The roof means I'm in control. I have a roof over my head. It's that false sense of security, which explains so beautifully the idea of sukkahs. Because going into a sukkah is removing the concept of roof. We go into something that's more of a flimsy structure to denote that I leave the gag, the concept, because I am in your hands, Hashem, and your hands alone. So the idea of a gag is this false sense of security, the smugness that I'm somehow in control. Maybe the pasuk is teaching us ki sivne bayis chadash. When you want to make a new you, a new bias, it begins v'asiso macha ligagecha. Make a fence around the concept of gag. The concept of Gag is, I'm in control and I'm in charge. The Torah is teaching of us, Sisa Masa, fence in on that concept. Bring in that concept. Close in that concept. In other words, work on realizing, as we said a moment ago, Hashem, I am in your hands and your hands alone. And maybe that's the way on a deeper level we could explain the pasuk when a person wants Sivna Bayis Chodesh to rebuild himself, his image, his bias, his very essence. V'asisa ma'ako l'gagecha, make a ma'ako, make a fence, hone in and control gagecha, that concept of the false sense of security and smugness. And perhaps that's indeed the avoda of Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim. Rosh Hashanah, which is all about being Mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'yitnu Lecha Keser Melucha, we will proclaim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Melech Malchei HaMlochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not about Gag. It's not about me. It's about the Ribbono Shel Olam. That brings us to Yom HaKippurim, because when we come to that realization, we should have Charata, Zivas HaChet, Kabbalah Al-Osed, Vidui, to improve. And then that brings us to Sukkos, where we show not only in verbiage did I say it, but I mean it. I mean it. And that's why I'm going into a sukkah. Because a sukkah is the antithesis of a god. And maybe that's the natural progression from Rosh Hashanah to Yom HaKippurim to Sukkos. Rosh Hashanah, I begin where I mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I understand I have to remove the concept. I have to fulfill Macha L'Gagecha, leading me to Yom HaKippurim, where I should feel broken through the Charata, the Kabbalah, the Azivas Achet, the Vidui. And then I show not only in speech, but I mean it in action. Hence I go from my home to a place where it's about the Schach. It's not about the Gag. To show the Ribbono Shel Olam, we are in your hands and your hands alone. I want to share with Olam one final pshat. Take a look. Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Hey. It's talking about the marriage, Ki Yikach Ish Isha Chadosha, remarriage. The pasuk concludes by saying, V'simach es ishto yasher lokach, to gladden his wife. In fact, somebody once pointed out that one has to gladden their spouse, their wife, every day of the year. The word simach, it says v'simach. The word v'simach, if one takes a look at the gematria, look at the pasuk inside, V'simach, the gematria of that word, Vav Sin Mem Ches, is exactly 354. Vav Sin Mem Ches is exactly 354. In a lunar year, which is what we Yidden follow, there are exactly 354 days. V'simach es ishtoi. The person has to fulfill gladdening the wife, making sure that there's proper behavior. V'simach es ishto, the gematria is 354, corresponding to every day of the year. I saw brought down, I know it's a well-known verse, we've probably said it in the past, but I actually saw it brought down in the name of Rabbi Aryeh Levine, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kodesh Levracha. I'd like to use it to conclude the shir. Regarding this concept of marriage and having a spouse and gladdening and bringing joy, and we added the Tzimach every day, Rabbi Aryeh Levine was once asked for advice to a young couple, the best piece, the most important, and I know it's a well-known verse, but I'd like to share it with you. It's based on something you find in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Mezuzah. If one takes a look in Hilchos Mezuzah, there's a debate how one should position the mezuzah. One sheet, of course, is that it's fastened straight up, and there's another sheet that says that it's done completely sideways. The Rama brings down that we end up doing it on a slant, which is indeed the way we do position the mezuzah, to go ahead and satisfy both opinions. How unusual is that? We have one opinion that says one way, another that says another, and comes along the Ramah in what perhaps might be the only time and says, so we'll do this compromise, we'll slant it in the middle, so to speak, to compromise and satisfy both opinions. Rabbi Aryeh Levine explains, because the first thing a couple walks into when they walk into their home the very first time, they see the mezuzah. And the mezuzah is supposed to remind them and to call out to them that sometimes there might be what potentially could be an argument or a disagreement or a machlokes, but the mezuzah, according to the sheet of the Ramah, reminds us of the compromise. And when the couple is walking into their home and the first thing they see is the mezuzah, for Shalom Bayis, remember that halacha in mezuzah, the importance of conducting your life together in any given situation. There might be two opinions, they might feel this way harshly and strongly, not willing to back down. Mezuzah reminds us of the importance to bend. Mezuzah reminds us of the importance to compromise. And that's why it says the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, we paskin like the Ramah, that that's the position of the mezuzah. And the truth is that in any relationship, we conclude the way we started, the value of just one yid, the value of bringing back only one lost brother. There's no such thing as just, and there's no such thing as only. In all of those relationships, we can work on and bring people closer. A relationship with a spouse, with a sibling, with a cousin, with a coworker, with a neighbor in shul. Remember the lesson of mezuzah, to bend, to compromise, to be willing to capitulate. We'll be messiah with what we've said a number of times. My father, Zatzal, says one of the most magnificent pshatim. In Pirkei Avos, you find that a miracle in the Beis Hamikdash was oimdim tefufim mishtachavim revachim. Literally, it means when we stood in the Beis Hamikdash, it was exceedingly crowded. When we bent, there was ample room. Now, that's a very big miracle, because if it was crowded when we stood, it should have been far more crowded when we bend. And yet, there was ample room. My father, that's all explained, in any relationship, oimdim, if you're going to stand your ground rigid, not be willing to bend or to capitulate or to compromise, oimdim, then the result will be tefufim, crowded, cramped, miserable. But mishtachavim, if you're willing to bend, to listen, to acknowledge and validate, to compromise, to hear, then revachim, it will bring revah, ample space, and b'siyata d'shmaya, a wonderful relationship. May it be the will of the Ribbono shel Olam, as we march towards Rosh Hashanah Tavshin Pei Gimel, that we're zeicha, hoshev teshivein, to work, find the person, don't let somebody be lost, work on the relationships, realize the power and the value of just one yid. It's not just the just, certainly not to that person. And in that schus, we should have the merit to be zeicha, to a gebench, the gezuntiyar, a kesiva, the chasima, toiva, and to be able, we spoke about the Gag and Sukkos, to be see the sukkah hamefoles, the bayis chodosh, but the bayis chodosh of the Beis Hamikdash, we should be zeicha to a good gebench, the gezuntiyar.